And now for something completely different.
Welcome to the BYU Sports Cave, a podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Network. It's time to slap in your earbuds and take a seat in the den.
Next on my dad's podcast, Around the Horn.
Well, folks, welcome back to the BYU Sports Cave. And in the Around the Horn section, I want to tell you why I'm a sports fan, and this is what I believe. I'll tell you the lessons learned from Utah's win over Southern Utah. I'll tell you the lessons learned from BYU's win over Arizona. I'll give you the takeaways for both games. I'll also tell you how it will apply in the rivalry game come Saturday. And in the Outside the Line segment, we are going to chat about why do BYU fans leave. We'll speak to a University of Utah fan, graduate Spencer Ferraro, whose story is that he grew up an honest-to-true BYU fan. And we'll sit down and we'll give him the mic so he can share with us his path that he chose to become a Utah man. Lessons learned from the Utah win versus Southern Utah. Let's deal with the straight facts, folks, about the win. This is Whittingham's 12th year at the U. It has been long spoken over the offseason, the whole offseason, about the hashtag the throw game. With Travis Wilson no longer here and in the program, it's now the Troy Williams show. With that, it has become clear that Whittingham has wanted to be more explosive, have more explosiveness on the offensive side of the ball. The throwing game. It has been quite a few years since Utah has had a passing game worth speaking about. When asked about it over the summer, Whittingham said he simply felt that the Utah lacked the personnel to execute a passing game. All right, guys, you know, let's not get negative about this, but yes, that means that Travis Wilson didn't have the ability to do that. And when they did let him go lights out and pass first, many times in the Pac-12, they went 5-7. That's not bowl eligible. So this year, they had to take a step in the right direction. Or Whittingham would have placed the limits that he had on Wilson on Troy and the co-offensive coordinators group yet again, and they would have played a conservative brand of football and let the defense win the games. He says, I'm not risk adverse, I'm loss averse. I don't like to lose games. You're absolutely right, and that's the way you should play it. The challenge is that approach has left them on the outside looking in on the Pac-12 championship. This year is different. How do we know that? Well, we saw Troy Williams go for 20 out of 35 pass attempts. I think that's far and away wide more than we've ever seen from Travis Wilson. That is, however, folks, a 57% completion number. So if we're comparing apples to apples, Utah fans and BYU fans, that's pretty low from a completion perspective. But nobody is looking at it or will ever talk about his completion numbers as long as there's a win by his name for that game. That will likely stay that way as long as Utah wins. Now, Utah guys, please note that these percentages are worse than Taysom's completion numbers career-wise and in BYU's first game versus Arizona. But let's set that aside for now. Why? Well, he got his team to a victory. And after all, that's all that matters is winning. Here's the issue. The Utah offensive line was horrible. Not that they can't correct it or it's as horrible and they just have no answers. It's something that you, in my mind, would have felt that they would have addressed already. They had the opportunity to deal with this during spring, summer, and now the fall. That same old line that changed, I mean, if you remember this last year, guys, They've changed their body chemistry, their muscle definition's better, and that O-line is ready to go, and it's lean and it's fit. Why are they having problems now? Sure, there's graduation rates. Sure, it's a different offensive line. Anytime you have a new line makeup, it's going to be different. I absolutely agree. But you had a long offseason. This offensive line really does face two different changes that impact them more than the changes that occur to themselves on the line. It's the fact that they have a different QB and they have a different running back. This O-line, like any O-line, is dealing with the first game jitters versus live bodies that don't possess a U on their jersey. They're sick and tired of hitting themselves, guys. This is live fire, and people just react differently when that occurs. However, I will say this is kind of the negative piece. If the D line is as polished as it was last year, then wouldn't have the offensive line blocking schemes and the ability to make Mack truck size holes in SUU's defensive front seven, wouldn't that have been crystal clear to a football mastermind like Whittingham? I think it would. Whittingham's brilliant. Now, I'm not about to blow smoke up your hindquarters and say that the Cougars, that our Cougars from BYU are going to blow out Utah at Rice-Eccles on Saturday. That's just foolish talk. What I am going to say is the win versus Southern Utah wasn't as dominant as some Utah fans will tell you at the water cooler this week. I also don't want you to go hold your breath, hold your head down low, or to think that the Utes are just going to walk away Saturday with the blowout win. They might, but there's some issues at Utah, and Whittingham's going to need to learn to figure that out, work with his coordinators to ensure that they possess the best possible team that they have on the field on Saturday. And I'm confident they will. I'm confident they will. But these are issues from the first game, and these are the lessons learned, guys. Last year, well, heck, the last 11 years, if I had a choice between either the head coach at Utah or BYU in a single game, Bronco versus Kyle, I would choose Kyle 11 times. And you should not doubt Utah's ability to put the screws to BYU for a sixth straight year. Lessons learned about BYU with its win over Arizona. Well, what can I say, folks? BYU won the day 18-16 in a dramatic fashion. But what did we learn? Well, we learned that Jamal Williams is a great running back for sure. The guy has blazing speed. He's tough as nails. Had 162 yards on 29 carries. That's 5.6 yards per attempt. And that's not half bad. In fact, that will put us into some nice third and short situations this year versus some of the toughest defenses BYU will have yet faced in their independent scheduling this year. We also learned that JUCO transfer Jonah Trinneman is a serviceable wide receiver. It's only one game, guys. We haven't seen a ton. He had like 49 yards. But the issue is he can catch. He's a tall receiver and he's a target. We get the other wide receivers involved, that'll be great. We also learned that if you put BYU in a neutral site stadium and give us access to your ticket base, we'll buy our tickets. We'll buy your tickets. Senior Kai Nakua said, "It just feels like a home game, to be honest." That's pretty cool. And it probably doesn't hurt, if the Big 12 is really going to happen, that we can show that we can travel and that we have fans everywhere. Because, as we kind of allude to in some of our sayings, every game is a home game. We also know that the Cougars show some massive heart to win on the road. I can't say it was the Kalani factor just yet. Again, the sample size, right? However, this is a game versus P5 talent. And Bronco had the propensity to lose those. Now, again, that's not a dig on Bronco. But time management was an issue. Bronco did have some strange and funky timeout calls. That alone was a big deal that allowed, let's say, Provo's Priest Quorum first assistant, Jake Olroyd, to kick his first game winning field goal to ice the win for BYU. One of the most amazing things that's coming out in post days, and of course you're seeing photos of it on the internet, and I think it's really important that we see Ty Detmer was joking around with Jake Olroyd on the field prior to him kicking the field goal. I think it loosened him up. I think that's important. It would have been incredibly difficult if I was to sit in his shoes and to start to see the stress and that the fact that you've never done this before at the college level, similar to what Ty has never done before past Saturday, is win a college football game as a coordinator and a kicker. But they relaxed each other. And so much so that Jake had to kick the winning field goal in his high school issued cleats because he'd never been issued his cleats from BYU yet. I suggest to Jake that he never, ever take those cleats off. Ever. Those are some lucky shoes. Keep them on, dude. I know they're green. I know you go to a blue and white school, but keep them on. This week, several fans of the team up north started to profess that BYU was forced to open its playbook and was forced to do that to get the win. That somehow Arizona, a crappy Pac-12 team, forced BYU to expose its playbook for the Utah game. Folks, that argument is horse crap. Let me go into some details. First, let's talk about the issue that got us into this time management thing, this playbook quandary in the beginning. BYU was leading Arizona until like a minute 50 left in the game. They were leading 15-10. So, if you're looking at it from a BYU's perspective, why did BYU need to open its playbook to win the game? And if they opened up their playbook at a minute 50, did they really share or show everything that's in the playbook? I don't think so. What I would say is that last drive wasn't panicked. It wasn't hurried. It wasn't frazzled until the last piece again. We talked a little bit about the time management, and they would have had a 10-second runoff if they didn't have the timeout there. But what they were doing was working. In fact, Taysom Hill threw for 21 out of 29 attempts. So he has 21 completions. Folks, that's 72%. That's best ever for Taysom Hill. Now again, it's one game. I'm not saying they're going to be playoff busters in any way, shape, or form. It's a long, long season. But 72%, that's much better. It was working. Now, when that same Utah fan comes to you and comes at you at the water cooler this week, think about this. Ty Detmer and Elisa Tuyaki, the coordinators, called a way conservative game for my taste. As soon as BYU scored the points to go to 15, BYU needed to continue to play aggressive defensive ball and to get the stop. Ty should have then turned around and continued to pound the rock for another score instead of putting Williams on the sidelines and then running Canada and Brown and up the middle. That created a four and out, and we had several stalling issues, penalties, whatever, that really kind of put us in harm's way. Now, I get it. We were getting some seconds, some additional time. All that was happy, and that was a controlled deal. But that aggressiveness, that if you can get this to a 2 or 3 touchdown lead before you ever take that foot off the pedal, that's the key. conservative play calling is like coaching DNA in the first times out. And I think Tuiaki and Detmer fell to that. I think if BYU is going to win on Saturday, they will have to knock this crap off and go full throttle at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Or in my mind, Whittingham will just impose his will for a sixth straight time. Takeaways from both games. Well, I think we got a nice taste. We got just enough to tempt our appetites and to give us ammo to fire at one another over Twitter during the rivalry week. Maybe the best lesson that we could take away is something that Whittingham and Sataki virtually said the same thing and quoted each other and said, we will not talk about the other team's game or the other team during this week. Those are probably wise words. How will these lessons from the Utah win and the BYU win apply to the game on Saturday? Well, I'll take Sataki's comments and let them speak for themselves. If you want something to change, then go out and do something about it. Talk is cheap, folks. This game on Saturday should be a very good one for both sides. Hail to the Holy War.
My dad's podcast is sponsored by...
Hey, that's great. But who are the chefs?
Not going anywhere for a while?
Great googly moogly.
Grab a Snickers.
You spell it.
Yeah.
Outside the Lines.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. In every sports fan's life, there's a human interest story. It's not just a human interest story. It's their life. It's the events that happen. It's how each person interprets these acts, their impact, the causality, and of course, the emotion that makes each one of us a fan. During the rivalry week, it can be just a little too much about blue-colored goggles. So, it can't be just about Cougar Blue. It's got to be about Utah Red. This week, we have Spencer Ferraro. He is a Utah fan, and yes, he used to be a BYU Cougar. Spencer, I want to thank you for your time, and I want to specifically thank you to give everybody a chance to get a little bit more about you and your story. First off, Spencer, why don't you take a couple of moments to kind of introduce us to yourself and tell us a little bit more about who you are.
Well, Brian, thanks for having me on here. Just a little bit about myself. I'm actually outside of Utah right now. I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm a CPA. I do forensic accounting out here. I'm married and I have two kids. Both are fairly young, 3 and 1. And I guess I bring kind of a different perspective to this whole rivalry than you'd think.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us. And how's the weather out there in California? Pretty hot still?
Well, we're pretty close to the beach here. So hot, by local definition, is if it gets above 80 degrees. And if it gets below 60 degrees, it's time to break out the sweaters and the external heaters for everybody sitting out on the patios. I'd like to say I'm not that bad, but it's definitely nicer weather out here, I would say.
Well, that's awesome. Spencer, could you describe for everybody your previous life as a BYU fan, how that came to be, and how you originally grew up cheering for BYU?
Well, my parents both went to BYU. My dad went there for law school. My mom went there for her undergraduate work, and they met there, and essentially they met at school and got married after that. So growing up, they were all big BYU fans. I was raised on the Miracle Bowl throws, the long list of quarterbacks coming from BYU, cheering for them. My first game memory is actually going to the BYU-Utah game. I think it was 1989. It was the one where BYU absolutely destroyed Utah, I think 70-31. You can check me on the scores there. But I remember sitting in the cold, cold stands, drinking hot chocolate and cheering as BYU beat up on poor Utah that day. Then all growing up, going through high school, it was cheering for Detmer, for Federick, the Cotton Bowl, all the way up through Lavelle Edwards' final game.
So were you a BYU fan during the Bronco Mendenhall era, or were you a fan during the Lavelle era?
I would say during the Lavelle era. The last year he was coaching was 2000.
Yep.
When I was cheering for him on that final game. Then I took my mission break. I went and served my mission and came back. I think Croton was still around when I got back, so there was kind of a disconnect at that point.
Sure, sure. I think a lot of fans had a disconnect with Croton and some of the things that were going on down there, I for one. If we transition over to Bronco, and I think it's an important question that a lot of Utah fans want to know, is what was your impressions of Bronco Mendenhall and his staff and his impact on the rivalry? And if so, do you have any specific examples or not?
Well, for me, it's kind of a different situation because I moved out to Los Angeles at the beginning of 2008. While this was still in the Bronco era, I would say it was kind of during his grace period, honeymoon type era where it wasn't as like intense scrutinization of Bronco. And so being up here in Los Angeles, I would try and keep up mostly with Utah at that point, but I'd try and keep tabs on BYU and how they were doing, but wasn't really that big of a impact out here. I mean, the LA sports, like the sports media and that stuff are all concerned about the Lakers, the Dodgers. And so any Salt Lake media I could follow was few and far between. So and there wasn't really that much Bronco mania, so to speak, both positive and negative, coming from the LA sports scene.
Okay. Yeah, I used to live, a little bit about myself to share with you, is that I used to live in Las Vegas for 4 years. And the sports radio talk shows there, it was really hard for me to keep up with BYU sports or anything Utah. Because when I turned on sports radio, you'd think what normal Vegas sports scene was, it was about the betting line. It was about what was going to happen in the horse races and so forth. And so I had to turn to the internet to try to get some of that information in. And so I'll ask you a little bit about that a little bit down the road. But I wanted to ask you a question. If it wasn't Bronco and you really didn't get that information, Spencer, what and when did you start to realize that your fandom had started to change? Was it a life event? Was it the school you attended? What? How did you evolve or migrate from BYU to Utah?
Well, this is probably going to be like one of the most unusual stories, but it comes down to two words: water polo.
Okay.
I played water polo and was on the swim team in high school, and then my first year, I ended up going to the University of Utah on academic scholarship.
Okay.
They had kind of a pickup water polo type game thing, nothing really serious, just scrimmaging and playing against each other like once a week before my mission.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, that's fun. That's great. Then I come back from my mission and it's blossomed a bit. It's gone from like just playing against each other to playing as a club team. So there weren't scholarships available. We had to go through the student government to get funding.
Yep.
But it was actually a legitimate team. We were playing against Arizona, Colorado State, Colorado School of Mines, Arizona State, various schools like that. And so I was playing on the team. I wasn't a starter. I wasn't the best on the team at all, but I was the contributing member.
Sure.
And so that was the fall of 2003. Like, I come back from this and played that season. At that point, I was kind of starting to waver, like, do I want to cheer for Utah? Do I want to cheer for BYU? What's going on here? To the point where some of my friends on both sides of the rival were saying, you need to get off the fence here. You kind of got to pick a side here. You can't just you wearing the white shirt and cheering for, let's have a good clean game, let's have good sportsmanship. No, you got to pick a side.
Yep.
And so I hemmed and hawed, and I can actually pinpoint the date. I went and looked it up just to be safe. It's March 12th, 2004.
Okay.
BYU was playing Utah in the semifinals of the Mountain West Championship Tournament. We're at a friend's house. There were BYU Utah fans and one Utah State fan of all things watching the game. And I finally came to the decision, you know what? I need to pick a side. And I can't actively cheer against the school that I'm representing athletically. So
absolutely,
I'm cheering for Utah. And so from that day, I was like, okay, I need to stick with Utah. I'm representing them. This is my school. This is who I am. I'm a Ute fan now.
Well, I think that is absolutely, in my mind, valid transition material. Because obviously you're going to the school that you're paying your tuition to, you're participating in some athletic, even if you weren't doing athletics, you're going to that school. And I think that's perfectly a viable transition, because we might all start out one school's fan, but I think your story, Spencer, is a common one. And have you found that amongst your friends, that a lot of people make that same transition, or was that, did that help you in your transition from cheering from the blue and white to the red?
I mean, I would say I've seen it, but it's probably not as common as, at least from my experience, I haven't really had too much commonality with that. But I do see that, like, going to a school is where you kind of start to develop, okay, this is my own sense of identity. I need to,
yeah,
like, I can't borrow what I grew up with. I need to establish what my own fandom is and my own reasons for it. And so I think as long as you're internally consistent, being true to yourself, then that's what you need to do.
Oh, absolutely. With that, you started to build your foundation and you started to get your feet firmly planted. How did your friends and your family handle it? Because we've seen on either side, because like you just described, your mom and dad went to BYU, you went to Utah, and this rivalry is really a family thing, and it's friends, it's all those other things, but how did your family and friends handle the decision, you switching to the Y to the U, and how did that dynamic play out with your family?
I'm going to take it as kind of two parts, one the family part and two the friends part.
Sure.
Family-wise, it's been just fine, mainly because we've been respectful of each other's fandom. My parents understand, I guess, why I'm cheering for the Utes now. My mom actually, after she got her undergrad, she later went and got a graduate in education from the University of Utah.
Excellent.
She still cheers for BYU because that's what she developed out of college, and that's what she's chosen. But she's got degrees from both schools. And so they understand, as long as, I guess, we're respectful and not being openly, I guess mean is not the right term, but respecting the other side's teams and what they're doing, and not trash talking or getting too personal or some of the other, I guess, mean aspects of the rivalry, then my family's just fine with it.
Well, I think that's the best way too. I agree.
As far as my friends, there's kind of a core group of six of us. We've all been friends since beginning of high school. I actually go back to kindergarten with one of them. And they've all been really understanding, supportive. I mean, there's some BYU fans. There's some Utah fans. There's one fan of, he actually went, like, one of them went to Boulder for his law degree. Another went to Boston, and he's currently at Georgia as well, pursuing a PhD. So, I mean, we've had all sorts of fans running the gamut of schools. Utah State's been represented. BYU's been represented. And it's the same thing. As long as we're respectful, then I think they're just fine with it. Well, I mean, they gave me a little bit of a hard time initially, but as long as I've stayed true to my decision, they've been fine with it.
Well, do you think it also helped that with your friends that went to a diverse background of schools, that that commonality, that ability that, hey, it's not just Spencer who's doing this, but the understanding that you got to go somewhere to get your schooling and scholarships, whether it be academic or athletic, or just the ability of, this is where I choose to go to school because that's the best curriculum and what I want to go in to study. Do you think that helped your transition, having that diverse amount of friends?
I don't know if it came into play initially when I made the transition, because at the time we were all going to either BYU or Utah at that time and then for the next couple of years. Okay. As we've gone into our own career path, that's when the transitions and the diversity of schools have come into play. And I mean, we've given each other a little bit of a hard time, especially the one who went to Colorado, and that's now our quote-unquote rival. So we give him a hard time about that occasionally, but kind of in good fun. Like, we're not trying to destroy each other, so to speak.
Well, that's awesome, Spencer, because I think when you destroy the other person, then that it always comes back right in your face, and it's not fun for either one, and you still want to keep these guys as your friends.
Right. I mean, we're friends for reasons other than just who plays who in football and who wins the game.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's well said. I want to kind of transition into the football arena back for the University of Utah. Now that you're cheering for Utah, who are some of your football greats that you've since 2004, and why do you still cheer for them today? Why do they hold a special part in your heart?
Well, I mean, with the 2004, that's when the main flow for Utah for going to the BCS, the Fiesta Bowl, and everything started up. So you've got your Brandons, you've got your Alex Smiths, your Brian Johnsons, later on your Braden Godfreys, Brady Browns, DeMonte Booker more recently.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of ones I tend to follow. But it's, I mean, for me, it's, they represent who I was, and I knew, I went to school with Alex Smith.
I went
to school, I guess, technically, with Brian Johnson, even though that was towards the end of my time at the U. Like, these are my peers, and this is what they're doing.
Absolutely. You identify with the people you're watching out on the field. I absolutely do believe that kinship's there. Now, kind of that transition that we talked about, media, and how do you keep abreast of the information that's coming to you in California, what media sources do you rely on to keep up with the University of Utah? What are your go-to stations? How do you get the information that you need to keep up with the football team and everything that is going on at Utah?
I would say my primary source is going to be Twitter, of all things.
Uh-huh.
Just the people I follow on there, both BYU fans, Utah fans, national media, and then the core group of friends that I mentioned previously. Several of them are still in the Salt Lake area. They'll text me updates. They'll send me stories, either on both sides of the rivalry. That's my primary source. I don't really listen too much to the sports media coming out of Utah. I just don't have time in my life.
Absolutely. Do you commute to work, or do you consume media in the car while you're driving? What's your approach on those types of new media that's coming out today?
This is going to sound weird from somebody living in Los Angeles, but my commute is actually shorter going from my home to my office than it was going to school when I was a student at the University of Utah.
Well,
so I don't really have that much time in my commute to be able to listen.
Well, that's awesome. I the average commute here in the Wasatch Front is about 22 minutes. And so you'll see a lot of podcasts try to tailor to that amount. But that's interesting. That's something I learned today, that you can have a short commute in California. I did not know that.
Well, it was by design, actually, because when I moved out to California, I knew where I would be working before I had an apartment. So I based my apartment search on finding as close a location to that as possible. Since then, I've actually lived in two different apartments besides that one that I initially had,
uh-huh.
And they've all been within a 5-minute walk of each other.
Oh.
So I've lived in the same area for quite some time here.
So I'll ask you that. Maybe you'll talk about this later, but are you a Los Angeles citizen, resident now, or are you ever contemplating a return back to the Wasatch Front?
I don't see myself being in Los Angeles full time. It's just not Like, it's been great while I've been out here, but it's just, like, I'm not a surfer guy, I guess. My sports allegiances outside of football, I'm still a Jazz fan. I'm a huge Real Salt Lake fan. I can't cheer for the Lakers. I just can't.
Well, good for you.
I used to pity the Clippers. They got good. So it's like, well, if I had to adopt another team, maybe it's them. But I've kind of stuck with my Utah sports allegiances that way.
Well, that's awesome. Now, I'm going to go back to football again and kind of, because you do have a different perspective because you're outside of the Utah media market, if you could change one thing about the rivalry today, what would it be and why?
It's going to apply not just to this rivalry, but for me to like the Auburn-Alabama, the Michigan-Ohio State. It just seems like it's too intense, too personal, and too mean-spirited. I mean, ultimately, it's college students playing a game for our amusement, and we need to keep that in mind.
Yep.
On both sides, on all sides. I mean, you appeal it to Auburn, Alabama, you have a guy who went and poisoned the trees and called in and bragged about sports radio. That's going way too far in my mind. There's other aspects of rivalries that go too far. It's just bring back the, I'm cheering for my team, I'm supporting my team, as opposed to I'm trying to tear down my opponent's team. That's what I would try and change.
Well, I think you're going to find a lot of people agree with you, Spencer. I think that's a common feeling. And I think many people out on Twitter would give you your support because that is one of the things that I've asked both Utah, BYU, Utah State, is if they could take that contentious issue out of play. And when we go overboard, the core game's fine. It's us as fans that do the nutty things.
Right.
Separate question, and this is something that maybe you can go into. Do you think that the rivalry game should be played every year? Or in your mind, is it good to take a couple of years off every so often?
I'm going to kind of hedge and say it depends, and I don't know if you want to touch into this. It depends if BYU gets into the Big 12 personally.
Okay.
Because setting aside the rivalry concerns, you're going to have your out-of-conference concerns, both with BYU and Utah. And can, realistically, both teams play the rivalry game each year and still fulfill, I guess, the conference requirements trying to get into the playoff?
Absolutely.
And I don't know if that's a legitimate possibility or not. So that'd keep my concern is it a sustainable game, not from the fan perspective or the mean versus nice aspect, is it valid from a competitive standpoint looking towards trying to get into the playoff for both teams?
I love that answer because I think for Utah, they were presented with a couple of options. And of course, everybody kind of surrounds the Michigan game. If you had a chance to have Michigan at home, would you do it? And 9 times out of 10, people are going to say that. But BYU hasn't had to face that issue, in my mind, because they're not in a Big 12 conference. When they do happen, your scenario plays out perfectly in my mind, because BYU will now be forced with the issue that they're only going to have 2 or 3 games a year to really schedule. And this position of have and have nots comes into play, and they haven't had to deal with these scheduling issues. So they're looking, I mean, obviously we know they've been trying to fill up games in November and October that are meaningful, but there's their position changes. And I think you've said that very eloquently. I do want to ask you,
It would come into play that both teams would be considered like a Power 5 game. So I don't think from that aspect it'd be a concern, but it's, can you sustain that every year? You like want to play home and away, take a 2-year break.
Absolutely. And you guys, Pac-12 plays a 9-game schedule, and a lot of people are saying that that is destructive to the Pac-12 getting into the championship games because you beat up each other, and everybody, even the top teams, get 2 or 3 losses. And that kind of keeps you out of the championship game, the playoff, and that likely could compound if you play it. I'm not saying the Big 12's the power conference that the Pacific 12 is, but I do believe that when you play one another, you do have a chance of not getting the record you need to get in the rankings so you can be in the college football playoffs. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it would come down to, do you need to mandate an eight-game conference schedule like the SEC has, or is it up to each conference? Because if it boils down to, all the conferences expand to a point where it's mandated or, unofficially or officially, eight-game conference schedule, four-game at a conference, I think it might be a little more realistic. If it's Pac-12 being with nine, SEC with eight, or Big 12 with eight, or whomever, if it's not standardized, then you start getting into the cannibalization concern that you brought up.
Yep. I think that's a good point. If everybody was to standard it out, it'd be a lot fairer. So, question for you on the BYU side, being that you used to be there and now you're on the red side. With Kalani Sitake being hired, and he's a former defensive coordinator for the U, what's your impressions of Kalani? And what impact, if any, do you think it'll have on this game, this rivalry, this year and in future years?
Well, I think Kalani was a good hire. BYU's got limitations as far as what head coaches they can bring in, self-imposed.
Yep.
So, Kalani was one of the only few options. Navy coach was an option. That's a choice that BYU's made. I think it's probably the best hire given the – I would have preferred the Navy guy personally, but he wasn't interested. If I remember right, he wanted to bring the triple option and BYU said that was a non-starter, so he declined.
Absolutely.
He would have been my first choice. Kalani, of the options, would have been my second choice if I was hiring for BYU. I think he brings in a mindset that will be beneficial for BYU going forward. What I've seen so far in the build to the rivalry this year, it's been kind of the stepping back from the intense negative building that's been in past years with Bronco, whether or not that's his fault or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a welcome thing. Whether that's sustainable remains to be seen, and I think that's only partially on him. It's going to be partially on how the fans from both sides react.
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. And one of the stories that I loved about Kalani was, and I don't know if you got to hear this, but the last time Utah was down at BYU and they beat BYU, obviously, and the football players were going to go out and start to dance on the Y. And Kalani pulled him back and said, "Hey guys, you don't disrespect the team you're playing." And that, in my mind, stood out to me that it wasn't just a BYU thing. He would have done that to any other opponent that he had been played. But for Kalani to think about that and to have BYU get a chance in this game, that maybe would help the BYU players to keep their emotions in check, play smart football. Kalani being able to have that type of an influence on the players could only be a positive thing for BYU. And I hope that Kalani and his friendship with Whittingham continue to bring, the biggest thing that I think was telling in this post-Arizona conference, Kalani said, "We are honored that we can call Utah our rival." That to me says volumes about who he is and the respect he's going to give Utah, and that hopefully this rivalry will be just like you said, we get the contentiousness out of the rivalry and we get it on the football field where it's supposed to belong. It can be intense, it can be fun, but more importantly, it's not mean-spirited. And so that's the biggest thing I see for Kalani. Is there anything else that you see from Whittingham, Kalani, that you'd like to share?
It seems like there's a lot of mutual respect from their time together at the school. I just hope that's able to continue.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna put you on the spot here, and this will kind of be our rapid fire questions, but we'll start it off here. What's your prediction, Spencer, for the game on Saturday? What's the BYU score? What's the Utah score? I probably don't have to guess who you think's going to win, but I think the score will tell us. What's the BYU score in your mind?
I think BYU is going to put up 24. I think I think Taysom's going to be able to drive him down a couple times, maybe get a short field on one, on a turnover somewhere. They'll get a couple touchdowns and get a field goal in there somewhere as well.
What about Utah?
I think Andy Phillips kicks a game winner as time expires, so they'll get 27.
Oh, you're going for the heartbreaker. Andy Phillips is a good looking back at
the rivalry game, whether the teams were both good, both mediocre, both horrible, or somewhere in between with either team, it's been a close game with only a couple of exceptions for the past 20 years, and I don't see any reason for that to be different this year.
Absolutely, and especially when BYU goes up to Utah, if it's going to be a close game, you're absolutely right. It comes down to a field goal. It's one or two points, and the kicking game's going to matter. Special teams is going to matter. I totally concur that special teams might come down to the final. Just hopefully that BYU, Utah doesn't run the field three times, right?
I'd be fine if Utah blows them out, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I think for many fans on either side, a blowout would be better for their hearts, their heart condition. So.
Oh, yes. I mean, I definitely think lives have been shortened based on the stress this game's put on fans of both sides.
So, kind of on a personal side, Spencer, I'm going to ask three questions. These are three questions I ask on any guest. What's your favorite soda?
Dr. Pepper.
What's your favorite sandwich?
The Godmother sandwich. It's not one you can get in Utah. It's based out here in Santa Monica. You can actually have Uber deliver it for you.
Oh, really? What's on that sandwich?
Yes. It's bologna, mortadella. It's a lot of Italian cold cuts and some lettuce, tomatoes, a couple of hot peppers. It's really good.
So
it's from Bay Cities.
So for those folks who don't know what mortadella is, could you describe that to the audience?
I'm honestly not sure if I can. It tastes good.
You're absolutely right. I love it, and it's from Bologna. I can't even say the name right. But it's got fat modules in it. It's thinly sliced. It's absolutely delicious. I totally agree with you. Some have pepper in it as well as pistachio nuts. And it's just absolutely fantastic on a sandwich. So just a thought there. Share it with the audience. What is your favorite city to visit outside of, obviously, L.A. and Salt Lake City?
That I've been to or that I want to go to?
Either's fine. Either's fine.
I'm going to go with Ben, too, and I'm going to say Florence, Italy.
Ooh, what took you to Florence, Italy?
My last name is Ferrero, so it's an Italian name, and it's kind of always wanted to go to Italy. So after we got married a couple of years, we're like, we need to make this happen before we start our family. So we flew out to Italy, did kind of the big three, Rome, Venice, and Florence, and Florence is my favorite city of the three.
Well, that's awesome. I've always wanted to go to Italy and cook and to just experience Italy. So I'm very envious, Spencer, you were able to get in touch with your roots and go see the homeland, as it were.
Yeah, it was definitely a memorable trip. I'd like to get out. You mentioned like cooking that stuff. I felt like we did a lot of tour stuff, so maybe down the road once I win millions or inherit millions or somewhere, I'd like to spend some time in Tuscany or Naples or Milan or somewhere along there and really experience the culture.
Well, if you ever do, let me know about it, because I'd be envious. I'll live through vicariously option.
Will do.
So, Spencer, I want to thank you. This is the kind of the wrap-up of the Outside the Lines. I absolutely appreciate you having the time. I know it was short notice, but thank you for coming on and sharing your experience. And I think, like we talked about in the discussion, there are a lot of common stories of people attending schools, seeing things through different lights, and bringing up different fandoms in their life because, like you said, you've established your roots, you put down your own feet, and you started to decide who you wanted to cheer for. And that's changed the direction of who you cheer for the rest of your life. And I find that admirable. So, Spencer, thank you for doing that, and thank you for sharing your story with us here on the BYU Sports Cave. Before I let you go, where can people get a hold of you if they want to continue the conversation with you out in the social space?
Primarily my Twitter handle, it's Stryker1SF, S-T-R-Y-K-E-R, the number one, SF. I do tweet about youth sports. I do tweet a lot about Real Salt Lake as well. And I like to throw in the occasional Simpsons quote.
John Kuhn, local sports writer, does a lot of Utah BYU. He is an absolute Twitter Simpson phenomenon. So if you haven't, Spencer, followed him, you may want to take a look at that. That guy might be a great follow for you.
I have not. I'll have to do that, though. I could probably give him a run for his money.
Well, that's awesome. I love The Simpsons. What is it, 28 years now that they've been renewed?
They're on their 28th season starting this fall, yes.
Okay. Well, that's a legacy, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, again, Spencer, thank you for your time. I know you've got kids, and tomorrow's an early day, but thank you for spending your time here with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. All right, folks. Thanks again for joining us at the BYU Sports Cave, and this is a wrap. Today's band that you've been hearing on the bumpers has been chosen by me. It's Imagine Dragons and their song, Warriors. You can find their link to their album on our website at tarnedbysports.com on today's show notes. If you like what you heard and you want to know more about what I believe, you can always follow me on the Twitter machine at BYU Sports Cave, or you can email me hate mail, make a song recommendation, or just provide feedback at BYUSportsCave@gmail.com. Join me next week on the BYU Sports Cave here on the Torn by Sports Network and Blog Talk Radio. You can also find our podcast on iTunes Podcasts and Stitcher Radio.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
it
though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.